save big money on your next project. Now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this blogging theology special from Bosnia and Herzegovina. And I'm delighted to talk to two eminent academics today. You are most welcome, gentlemen. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
It's great to have you here. Thank you very much for coming. I think the first question on everyone's mind, on everyone's lips, is who was Alija Izetbegović and why is he so important to your country's history and indeed Europe's history?
Alija Izetbegović has been recognized by modern history of Bosnia and Herzegovina as a strong symbol of the style of life and state that has been existing here in Bosnia and Herzegovina. He used to be a leader, philosopher, thinker. He was religious practitioner. He was lawyer by education. Used to be anti-fascist during the as young boy during the World War II in here. Then he pretty much symbolizes the faith of the people he used to belong to and the country he used to belong to or lead to for a certain period of very dramatic history. By very nature of his, he was a Muslim with very wide, deep, cosmopolitan understanding, views, and political principles. Mm-hmm. He is known as a leader of the Party of Democratic Action that he found with his associates in the eve of the aggression upon Bosnia and Herzegovina. He led the referendum for the independence and basically was the author of the referenda question. He was the first president of presidency of Bosnia and Herzegovina, which is a collective state executive body. But during the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina between 92 and 95, or two-sided aggression from Yugoslavia or Serbia from east first and Croatia in the second year of the war. He acted as the president of the country, supreme commander of Army of the Republic of Bosnia and Herzegovina, negotiator on international scene, as well as coordinator of many activities within the country, which helped facilitating the re-establishment of different state structures and institutions that had been destroyed on purpose by two aggressors in order to make the country becoming fully ineffective, non-functional, in order to create prerequisites to conquer the parts of the country, respectively, Serbia and Croatia. But he was known as very wise, calm in expression, but very strong in actions, brave person with good knowledge of philosophy, many different sciences, religions and philosophy of religions. And he was easily communicating the different elements of the science with politics and with ordinary life simultaneously, with highest level of world leaders and common people of Bosnia or surrounding countries. He was very well speaking, the language of European Christianity and the language of Islamic tradition, not just only here in Bosnia, but he was traveling across the Islamic world, and he was known for his open-minded and very direct observation. The one of them being, in Europe, I see a lot of Islam and very little Muslims, because people are hardworking, honest, they respect their words, their agreements, their streets are clean, their squares and parks are clean. Here in Middle East, I see a lot of Muslims, but not so much Islam. And for a certain while, people were hesitant to his approach to the reality, but then they understood the message and accepted that kind of self-critique approach.
I think one of the most famous of his books is called Islam Between East and West, available in many languages, Arabic, English, obviously in. And one thing that really struck me reading through this book is that this man was an extraordinary intellectual. He knew the Islamic tradition. As a Muslim intellectual, he knew the Islamic tradition very well. But also, as a non-Muslim Western intellectual, he knew about John Locke and Thomas Hobbes and Kant and all these extraordinarily seminal figures who helped to frame the West's worldview today as a secular liberal civilization. And he was very intimately aware of both and is able to articulate both worldviews, the Islamic and the non-Islamic Western worldview, in a very interesting and fruitful way. He wasn't anti-Western. He was a Westerner. He was a white Westerner as well, a Muslim. But his thought is very rich and detailed. And profound, and as the word you use, wise. I like that word, very wise thinker. He's not just a bureaucrat. This man can see through and have deep insights into things, and I like that a lot. So his work, I think, still powerfully speaks today in our current year too. But who is he for you? What is his and also particularly, how does he speak to us today? Because when did he pass away? Was it 2002? Was it 2003? So what is his thought, his personality, his statesmanship speak to us today?
Professor Cikotic already mentioned, I would say, the most important characteristics of the late president Izetbegović. But right now, thinking about your question and what to say, I would say that he was a symbol and role model.
Symbol and role model.
Yes. Why symbol? When we are talking about the dissolution of Yugoslavia and all what happened in that time, actually Alija Izetbegović symbolized our nation, Bosniak nation. He symbolized Islam, and he symbolized the statehood of Bosnia and Herzegovina. And it was a huge burden for him, because in previous period, Islam and Bosniakhood were like strangers in Yugoslavia. Not totally, but there was some kind of the bad assignment upon us. So Izetbegović came in the eve of the democratization of Eastern Europe, Southeastern Europe. And he represented that good Islamic, I would say, scholar, thinker at the first place, good Muslim leader, and very profound philosopher who knew European tradition, all philosophical tradition, the new philosophies in Europe, especially existentialism. I think that he well understood Søren Kierkegaard, for example, yes, Martin Heidegger.
Jean-Paul Sartre.
Jean-Paul Sartre, of course, you will find so many quotes in his books, yes, related to Jean-Paul Sartre, Karl Jaspers, etc. So Izetbegović came for us as a symbol, as a hope, as someone who is brave, who is honest, and who's got honor.
But what about his relationships with Catholics and Orthodox Christians and the Jewish community in this country? How did he view them politically? in his worldview? Did he see them as very much a part of the pluralistic society? That
Of course he did. Because he came from that, if you want, Ottoman tradition, where, you know, when the Ottomans came to this part of the world, they brought this kind of the universalities, universal approach to the state, to the communities, and they introduced millet system, like the Catholics, yeah. They had their autonomy, Orthodox, they had so their the own...
So the Christians and the Jews can have...
They lived here under one umbrella.
Right.
Till that time, we know that this part of the world was divided on the Catholic and the Orthodox civilization, culture, religion, whatever. The Ottomans brought it here, and not that they brought the new culture, the new religion, Islam itself, but also Jews from the Andalusia found their homes here. And that richness, that pluralistic society actually was quite normal for us.
So Bosnia is a very rich pluralistic history, that this is part of its normative experience. It's not
of
a
course.
Recent thing. It goes
of
back
course.
Centuries and centuries.
That's why you will find, and even when we are talking about Alija Izetbegović, that he will say, but we are the good example for Europe. We were pluralistic before you decided to be like that, you know. So in that sense, he symbolized definitely for us, the renaissance of Bosniakhood, of our nation, the renaissance of Islam in this part of the world, if you want, and of course the renaissance of the Bosnian statehood, state of Bosnia and Herzegovina. In that sense, he was a symbol. The role model, Alija Izetbegović was a highly ethical person. Mm-hmm. His ethics were at a high level. Probably Professor Cikotić can talk about it more because he personally worked with Alija Izetbegović. But his ethics, even today when we are talking about it, is example for all of us who want to follow his Muslim path, to be European Muslim, to live that kind of way. He said once to one German journalist, I think during the war, I don't have a problem with my shoes. I am European and I am Muslim. So this is not a problem for me. If you are creating problem about these issues, it is your perspective. My perspective is quite okay. I know that I am European. In the genus, European nation, Bosniaks are. We are living here for thousands of years.
Exactly.
That's right. And we are Muslims, and we don't have a problem with that. So he was wise, brave, man with honor, man with dignity, man who knew what he's talking about, what he's standing for, and man who was wide enough to say, but Bosnia is big enough for all of us to live here in peace and harmony.
And there's a great quote from his book. It says, and I'm quoting from him now, and that which we call Bosnia is not merely a strip of land in the Balkans. For many of us, Bosnia is an idea. It is the belief that people of different religions, ethnicities, and cultural traditions can live together.
Thank you for that quotation.
And I thought that's a great quote. So.
Yeah, he was highly spiritual, philosophical person in many aspects of his performance. And it was very interesting. You know, as a soldier, I know that the wars are waged and won at the level of morale, politics, media, and then at the very battlegrounds. When the war started in Bosnia, our two enemies assumed they had everything, strong militaries, weapons, equipment, logistics. We had nothing, no military, no weapons, no equipment, no chance to defend ourselves. But strongly believing in hierarchy of different principles, he was very much trusting our right ability and chances of defending ourselves. Mm-hmm. We were not attacking anyone, we were defending ourselves. But at the beginning, when the war started, when the aggression of Serbia started during the 1992, he was strongly insisting on high performance of our military, even though the aggressors committed crimes at very large scale. He was insisting that we were behaving in quite opposite mode.
So he didn't go into revenge mode, so that they did this to you, he would then do it to them.
Not only that he was appealing not to do any revenge, even when the opportunities availed the chances to us, but not to think even about it. So that was difficult to accept for many individuals.
Because it's very natural to want to have revenge against genocide, I mean, of course.
Yes, because genocide was committed during 1992 in few areas of Bosnia and Herzegovina. So wherever we practically didn't have organization of defense and ability to defend ourselves, the aggressors on the scales of tens of thousands of innocent people systematically being killed, or women systematically being humiliated and raped. Then he started changing the opinion of the world leaders towards Bosnia and Herzegovina. It was not a secret that some European centers of influence were thinking of Bosnia and Herzegovina as a state who would probably cease to exist in 92, 93. But then he completely changed the opinion of the world leaders and managed to convince all those freedom and justice loving people within Bosnia and Herzegovina that Bosnia is a country with a lot of room for all differences that used to coexist in Bosnia and Herzegovina throughout history, and that the heart-like shape of Bosnia should be preserved, as he used to characterize it. We have created the miracle of Bosnian defense, and that miracle is becoming a reality, will continue to live and flourish as a nation of all differences that have been imminent to Bosnia and Herzegovina throughout a long history of century of mutual coexistence, where all those differences were not strange to each other. And this is something we have got to reconstruct, reorganize, and reestablish. So he managed to convince a lot of Serbs and Croats to he, together with the whole organization that he was the head of, all state structures and institutions, the key functioning one, have been remanned with critical positions covered by competent Serbs and Croats. So this is one of the explanations how Bosnia and Herzegovina managed to survive so cruel, brutal, two-sided aggression without, at the first sight, any chance of defense and survival. His philosophy, his perseverance, his strength, combined with pragmatic, constant work, wisdom, and practicalities on many different fields have made a great difference and is probably one of the greatest reasons why we have managed to do something that most people from outside, even from our immediate neighborhood, had been not expecting from us.
Gosh, that's amazing. So just a couple more quotes, just very brief quotes from his work. He said, "Islam is or should be a permanent searching through history for a state of inner and outer balance." In Arabic, it's mizan, this idea of balance. That's a Quranic term. Beautiful quote. Another one, which I think is really touching. "The courage of the Bosnian woman, her strength and her pride were one of the decisive factors in the struggle of Bosnia and its people for survival." So he was no misogynist. He recognized the virtues of the Bosnian woman, her strength and her pride, and the centrality of her existence and her struggle for survival of Bosnia itself. Those extraordinary quotes. One doesn't hear, I don't want to be rude about my country, the United Kingdom, and I'm not going to be rude, but we don't hear that level of that kind of eloquence, that wisdom, that looking beyond the immediate kind of ephemera of our day-to-day politics with that kind of deep vision It just doesn't exist. I don't hear it. I'm not going to mention names from many of our politicians now. But here was a man who wasn't just a politician. He transcended that, it seems. He was a human being in the deepest sense, a man who spoke from a profound level of wisdom, as you have said.
Don't leave your question unanswered about his works and the importance for today and for the future. That deep vision, I would say, is quite important. It's his realism. He criticized the state of the Islamic nations all around the world from the realistic point of view. And it was, kind of Ghazalian point of view. You need to understand, you need to learn, you need to understand to be able to criticize. And he was like that. He understood very well, but he always emphasized that future for the Muslim nation belongs in their obedience to God Almighty and to be Islamized, if I can say, talking about the majority of Muslim population in the Middle East and other world regions. So I really strongly believe that Islam between East and the West, Islamic Declaration as a very important book of scripture of Alija Izetbegović, would be important even in the future for the Muslim thinkers who would like to develop the new ideas about our societies, our communities, and our position in the world. Because his thinking was global. He didn't think in our local environment about Bosnia, about Yugoslavia. He was thinking at the level of civilizations and the cultures and the religions, if you want. So that's why Izetbegović actually is occupying very high position in our intellectual life and in our intellectual tradition, and especially because of his personal history. Twice he was in jail, just after World War II, and in 1983, when the communist regime put him in jail with the other Muslim thinkers. So that kind of the personal life, experience of life that he had, these battle struggles that he had, writing during the 70s and 60s, but mostly the 70s, about very profound Islamic issues here in Yugoslavia, in the socialist country, it was something. It was something. And he remained on that path always, and he remained very down-to-earth person. If you will see him in the street, you will not think about him as a president of the presidency or someone who in world politics had important role for a few years. Mm. He was very down to earth. But philosophically, he was profound, very deep vision, and very global issues that he actually tried to understand, to explain, and to point out some important things to the Muslim leaders, Muslim kings, presidents, and of course, believers as such. We know that he addressed very powerful issues in Tehran, in Cairo, yes, when he emphasized why Muslim culture, civilization, why Muslims are lagging behind the modern world, behind the West, if you want. Mm-hmm. So these words were very powerful. Mm-hmm. And he had strength to say it as someone who is coming from Bosnia and Herzegovina, a very small country. And he did it in the front, in the face of the kings and the presidents. Mm-hmm. So when I said the role model and the symbol, I think that definitely Alija Izetbegović is something what we Bosniaks want to be, to follow the truth, to be righteous, and to speak out what we think that we have to do no matter who is listening. Alija Izetbegović, in that sense, was wise, brave, and man with dignity.
And we could do with those qualities very much today, I think, to guide us. And I think just coming on to the next point of discussion, perhaps, and I think we are witnessing the seemingly inexorable rise of right-wing populism in Europe, especially in France, of course, Italy, Germany, and not just there, in other countries as well. And at the heart of this movement, I think, is a view of the Muslim as the other, capital O, other, a foreign invader even, who does not belong in Europe. And I hear this rhetoric all the time. I hear it on Twitter, I hear it on YouTube, I hear it at Speaker's Corner. Yet this is a lie. This is simply a lie. And it's easy to refute in many ways. Many white Europeans choose to forget that Islam has been native to Europe for many centuries. And there are literally millions, have been millions of indigenous white Muslim people here in Europe, actually. Islam is the most widespread religion in Bosnia and Herzegovina, which is a white European country. And many people just choose not to acknowledge that fact. And to see the Muslim as the other, as I say. And we're all Muslims here. We're white, indigenous Europeans. And as I walk the streets of Sarajevo, you know, many, many of them are Muslims going back many, many centuries. And they're not invaders. They come from here, they belong here, and they're Muslims. So we need this wisdom, we need this fortitude, we need this courage, we need this global vision. But what can his thought bring to us, if it can? How can Bosnia itself actually today help to change this narrative, if it can? I mean, or is it something beyond our control? I know these are big questions, but I think we are seeing the rise of something that's dangerous. And in your history as well, with the many Serbian Orthodox Christians who were guilty of the most horrific crimes against humanity, these are fresh in many people's memories. And there are people in the world today who would seek to reignite this toxic narrative. And it's dangerous again. I would say we're in a very dangerous time again in our history. We seem to have learned nothing. Am I being pessimistic?
Well, to some extent, I guess you are ringing some bells of alert. And if they are not heard and acted upon appropriately, then you might be very right, not just pessimistic. I believe having so specific geopolitical, geocultural, even geoeconomic position, Bosnia could be a good model for many European dilemmas and open questions. The coexistence of all differences was quite natural here in Bosnia. Mm-hmm. My colleague has already mentioned, at the end of the 15th century, when the Jews were expelled from Spain.
Catholic Spain,
the first place in those days, Europe, they were offered hospitality to was today's Bosnia, or those days Bosnia-Herzegovina. Bosnia, the Muslim world, the Ottoman state, part of Ottoman state. You still have got an influential Jewish society here in Sarajevo, or in Bosnia-Herzegovina. The Catholics and Orthodox ends or starts the territories inhabited by them here in Bosnia. So it's a territory where those territories inhabited by Catholics, Orthodox, Muslims, and Jews in the overlaps. It's been existing here for centuries. That
500 years, how many? Many, many, since the Ottomans.
Well, at some 500 years. Right. Then half a century under Austro-Hungarian Empire, precisely 4 decades. Then Kingdom of Yugoslavia. But Bosnia-Herzegovina, there has got that. It's not just the matter of geography. Mm-hmm. It's the matter of people and mixture of different influences that have been creating the values at the higher level. The spirituality of Bosnian people is above the individual Serb, Bosniak, Catholic, and Jewish identity. Mm. It's an added value that amalgam of all those differences melt throughout centuries and influencing each other. If I tell you that during World War II, the fight against fascism of all Yugoslav communists and anti-fascists took place basically only here in Bosnia and Herzegovina. All major battles have been fought here in Bosnia. All major political decisions for socialist Yugoslavia during the war were taken on the soil of Bosnia and Herzegovina. It is not just by chance. Mm-hmm. There are strong reasons. But we have got greater states ideologies, greater Serbia, greater Croatia, that tend to ignore existence and importance, not just of Bosnia and Herzegovina as a state, but to ignore Muslims or Bosniaks under their national ethnic name as a political nation, political people. And they have made so terrible mistakes, covered by so expensive attempts of conquering parts of Bosnia and Herzegovina unsuccessfully. And I believe those ideologies are still there. Those ideologies are also dangerous because they have got support from some centers of influence from different European capitals or places. On the line of fight against Islam, even though the Islam itself in Bosnia and Herzegovina does not make any kind of reasonable argument for anyone to attack them, and let alone to make a kind of reactive measure against Islam, because even though the Serbs and Croats have committed crimes of wild range, there was no revenge whatsoever towards neither of those people, even though when opportunity were given to Bosnian military or Bosniaks somewhere in certain specific areas where they dominated during the war. I believe the future of Europe has been ignoring the leadership position it used to have throughout history, which believes it can now live in its semi-continental splendid isolation, if I may put it in those words, is not probably going to work for a long time in years to come, because that kind of historic inertia does not have that much power to push it forward throughout the challenges of the modern world. Europe used to be a center of world politics, world domains of influence, but after the end of the Cold War, it started sliding outside and downwards from the center of the world affairs and world processes. And it's not going to maintain the importance of its position, even though it still looks like it is important. I believe the models of mutual respect and coexistence that has been living throughout Bosnia and Herzegovina functionally, peacefully, and in harmonious fashion throughout centuries is a model we can take. So Muslims are not a strange body to Europe. I mean, a lot of cultural, artistic, spiritual, industrial, and business issues reached Europe throughout Arab presence in Spain for seven centuries and presence of Ottomans in the Balkans afterwards. And I believe the history of the whole mankind, apart other things, is the history of conquers, killings, pillages, and violence. But this is the essence of our human nature. The conflicts are negative when they effectively took part, but they work as a driving mechanism of human development. All human innovations, progresses, and discoveries have been made in order to make one country, one side stronger, better, and more powerful than the other. And this is how the whole world is being constantly developed. So I believe we cannot neither ignore nor change that side of human nature and human behavior on both individual and collective level, but accept the reality. And I guess Europe should not view the Balkans and the Bosnia in particular as its periphery. It should rather look at us as a chance of its, and I believe we could serve as a bridge between many European economies and European states, with some now fast developing Islamic economies, yeah, and some states.
Do you want to add anything up, or shall we?
The question of otherness, I mean, quite important during the dissolution of Yugoslavia, during the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina, and it played a significant role in the narrative of greater Serbian ideology at the first place, and greater Croatian ideology as well. Greater Serbian ideology has a very powerful stream, which is playing with the otherness as a threat, as an evil, as something what has to be abolished, something what has to disappear. And unfortunately, we saw it during the war, how it was implemented on the ground through the war crimes, through the explosion of the people, the destruction of the cities and the villages, etc. Yeah. So the otherness in that sense, through the lens of the greater Serbian ideology, unfortunately, had some kind of the influence of European far-right ideologies, especially in the Central Europe, I would say, especially in the Central Europe, from Hungary, Slovakia, Austria, Italy, and these former communist countries, even in Eastern Germany. So European Union, and I will really try to be very, very quick about it, to very fastly explain my position, lost the chance by the implementation of the justice after the war in Bosnia-Herzegovina to put what Professor Cikotić emphasized already, Bosnia as an example of the coexistence. By the implementation of the justice, they had the chance to do it and to have Bosnia as a, again, role model for their own framework that they are building. Unfortunately, they didn't do it. No. They didn't do it. And today we are suffering. And of course, you are right. We see what is going on. And we know what kind of the perspectives we have to fight.
The dehumanization of people. Yeah. This is not just the othering, it's they're not quite as human. We see that in the way Palestinian lives are of less value to certain other lives, Ukrainian lives, when it comes to conflict. They're seen as much less valuable. We don't worry about them. We don't know who the names of these people, but we know the names of other. There's race involved. There's
Paul, all of this. We know what it means. Yeah. We know from our personal, collective experience, we know what it means, unfortunately. Mm. So in that sense, we have some kind of the, untrust toward Europeans. Mm-hmm. Why they didn't react properly, very fastly, when genocide was filmed. In 1992, genocide started in Bosnia-Herzegovina. From April to August, the Srebrenica genocide was just the peak of it. Unfortunately. So yes, we see that the far-right ideologies are rising around us, and again that we are otherness. And probably for most of them, we are evil otherness. Yeah. Because we are Muslims. But our experience, if you want, telling us that we have to find ways how to put it down, to somehow defend ourselves in that sense, to create some kind of the different environments, etc. But the future in that sense is not promising, if you want. Unfortunately, that Atlantic thought lost its position in the last 20, 30 years. Now Europeans are mostly developing the political ideas here in the Central Europe. Central Europe, as we all know, is kind of, you know, radical environment for the political ideas. So future is not bright in that sense. But again, we are living, I would say, in the last 150 years, more or less, in that kind of the environment. We will find solutions. But again, as you mentioned, we as otherness, as indigenous white people, even that white, I don't like to mention.
No, I'm using it because that's what people subconsciously think, even if they don't vocalize it in that way. I'm just trying to give voice to that thing. And this comes to perhaps our last point, that this year itself marks the 29th anniversary of the Bosnian genocide, which saw the brutal killing of well over 8,000 Bosniak Muslims by a Serbian nationalist militia. And I just want to take this opportunity just to read some words from this marvellous book by Abdul Hakim Murad. Now, you may think, who is this Arab I'm going to quote from? No, Abdul Hakim Murad is the Muslim name of Tim Winter, who is very much English, professor at Cambridge University, and a Muslim, of course, with a Muslim name. His most recent book, Travelling Home, Essays on Islam in Europe, where we are now in Europe, is a chapter there, chapter 4, Islamophobia and the Bosnian War. And I really recommend this book, by the way. It's a collection of essays on contemporary subjects. And I just want to read a couple of paragraphs from the beginning of this chapter, which speak very powerfully, I think, to what you're saying and to the issues. So he writes, this is Tim Winter, "One of the most disturbing features of the war which devastated Bosnia between 1992 and 1995 was the widespread reluctance of Western politicians, churchmen, newsmen, to acknowledge the role which religion was playing in the conflict. Mm-hmm. It only seemed worth acknowledging during periodic denunciations of the risk of Islamic extremism, a phenomenon that, when pressed, journalists working in Bosnia conceded was rather elusive." That's Tim's way of saying it didn't exist. "The reality, which was frequently one of militant orthodox extremism, seems seldom to be frankly discussed. The war was, we are told, a contest between ethnic factions driven by ancient hatreds. And the fact that its protagonists were divided primarily by religion and shared a race and a language was deemed insignificant. Anti-Muslim prejudice was no doubt at work here. One may assume that had the Serbs and Catholics been Muslims and their victims Christians, then the Western mind would immediately have characterized the war as a case of violent Muslims murdering secular, integrated, democratic Christians. Since in Bosnia the favored stereotypes were almost perfectly reversed, the memory has largely been dismissed, censored and forgotten as an annoying and scarcely possible anomaly." In other words, we've forgotten in the West the realities of what has happened. "A quarter century on," he writes, "that official characterization, by and large, persists. Generally, it is the case that the European and American popular consciousness has consigned Bosnia to oblivion, although fewer than three decades have elapsed since over 9,000 Muslims were tipped into mass graves at Srebrenica, while the local UN commander, the United Nations commander, accepted a glass of champagne from the victorious Serbian general, who then went off to church. And where Bosnia is still remembered, there is a dogged resistance to defining it as it was. A war which, at least for its Orthodox," these are Christians, "Orthodox participants, was an intensely religious experience. However, among European Muslims and a small but significant non-Muslim public around the world that uneasily recognizes that the crime of Srebrenica was far worse than that of 9/11. I mean, when I read these words, wow, he's right. The numbers involved, this was far worse than 9/11. This comforting amnesia is rejected as an unacceptable whitewashing of crimes whose sectarian foundations must never be ignored. War crimes investigators have consistently found that the Serbian forces place religion, Tim Winter doesn't say, is Christianity, at the very center of their hardline national vision, and that many of the most iconic atrocities bore a strongly religious aspect. Now, I could go on, and I'm not going to, at the end of the quote, some extraordinary facts, statistics, and history that is forgotten in this book, Travelling Home by Abdul Hakim Murad. These are very moving words. He mentioned the massacre, Europe's Muslim genocide, we could call it, I think, less than three decades ago. In our common Western consciousness, we had the Holocaust, we had World War II, and then nothing after that, maybe in other parts of the world, certainly not in Europe. This is simply a false narrative. It's half the story. The question is, well, not just what happened, which is an important question, but would the victims of the genocide have been brutally massacred if they were not Muslims?
I will just to remind all of us, a few months ago, maybe a year ago, Rishi Sunak said that Ukrainian war is the first war at European soil after the Second World War. Yes. So actually, he totally forgot.
That's the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, well, the former Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
So you see the perspective.
The problem.
You see the problem. One of the most important historians, intellectuals in Serbia, Milorad Ekmecic. When war started, dissolution of Yugoslavia, and when war started in Bosnia-Herzegovina, said, I think that finally we see that the end of the Eastern question. We are talking about the end of the 20th century. Eastern question is related to the Muslim population and the Muslim belongings in the Southeastern Europe. Who will rule which area? Russian Empire, Western European powers. So you can see actually that long dure history, what it meant for the ideologist of the greater Serbian ideology. So it explains something. The role of religion, I said, very powerful stream within Serbian Orthodox Church. See, unfortunately, the killing of the others, especially Muslims, as a good deed. And this is the problem. And of course, we know that. We know we are dealing with that intellectually. We are dealing in that with that politically. But the radical explanations of the otherness that we see in these intellectual circles actually are very problematic. They are creating a lot of problems, a lot of hostilities. And in that sense, I'm not sure that it will end somehow. Of course that it would be different if some Muslims killed Christians. Today you can compare it through the war in Ukraine and the war in Gaza, or you can take some other examples. But unfortunately, in that time, European leaders, most of them, were like blind on one eye. Okay, but maybe it will be over very soon and people will forget it. If that is not going to be changed, and I'm not positive about it, it means that the whole world is in deep trouble. But unfortunately, this is our world that we are living in. We need to create a better environment to work for the betterment of all people. Just the question is, are we strong enough to do it? Yes, the religion played a significant role. It wasn't religious war, of course, but it played a significant role thanks to these intellectual streams within churches which saw otherness as a threat and as a problem.
Maybe to answer your question in a very straight fashion, yes, those people in Srebrenica had been killed because they were Muslims. This is how Mladic, the commander of Serbian military, explained, giving Srebrenica as a gift to Serbian people as a revenge to Turks for what they had done some two centuries before. And I believe it's very important to see different mechanisms of manipulation with history, with ideology, with religion, even with the justice and truth, for the political purposes, ideological purposes. And Serbian Orthodox Church has been instrumentalized for the greater Serbia ideology. It was encouraging, blessing, and supporting the acts of different crimes of different scales in order to execute and implement the ideology of Greater Serbia. No way that history knows the examples of so obvious wrongdoing that produces some good effects and results. And being so strong and stubborn, courageous, and persistent on its position, as we started our communication with the role and personality of Ali Izetbegović, we believe in our survival and chances of flourishing in time to come more and more, because we managed to defend ourselves in times where we had almost no visible chances. We had survived a few waves of genocide. It doesn't matter, is it 9 or 12 or 11 or 10. But the historic conclusion is that each next wave of genocide was bigger, stronger, and more brutal than the previous one. And we simply cannot afford the next wave of genocide. So we have got to do everything we have to prevent it. Genocide is a part of a wider ideology which has got you need to kill, expel, and assimilate the Muslims in order to resolve this Eastern issue, Muslim issue, whichever way you want, Greater Serbia issue. But it is becoming now all very evident, as Hegel or Karl Marx used to argue, what happens in history for the first time is history. Whatever happens similar to it later on, it's simply a copy or a plagiat. So we don't believe that they were heavily supported by a number of European capitals in 92, had all the weapons. Bosnia-Herzegovina looked to have nothing to defend, but we managed to defend ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we believe in our ability, our will, and all capacities needed to continue to persist as an open society with equal chances for everyone. And you are completely right. Had the Jews or the Christians been suffering in Gaza, the reaction of the West would have been quite different.
And this, I mean, I'm not going to change the topic of this conversation at all at this as we conclude, but one can't help noticing that despite social media showing us all the destruction and killing, Israel's genocide in Gaza continues as we speak. with little international accountability. So it's not even when we can watch it on our iPhones, on TikTok or Twitter, or on YouTube, whatever, which we can, even that visibility does not or results in little international accountability. Whereas in 1992, there was some footage, but it didn't have that universal, it didn't have internet and social media at that time, like we do today. So that's a very sobering thought, that even with that exposure, the international accountability, the West's cover, although I know it's beginning to fracture now, but the West's cover diplomatic and military support for Zionist occupation and ethnic cleansing continues more or less. The West is not, and the thing about, would it have mattered less, would it have mattered, would the Gazans' existence, the Palestinians' existence have been more valued had they been Christians or white and so on? I think that's a valid question. Actually, and we're still seeing the same factors at work, perhaps, there, the otherization of the Palestinians. We don't really know who they are. You know, they're kind of Arabs, and you know, as opposed to the Ukrainians, we do know who they are. They're like us, as many Western journalists put it. The same dynamics are there, the otherization, the dehumanization, and the killing.
Unfortunately, the dehumanization of the specific groups, specific ethnic groups or religious groups, looks, it is right now at a high level, and actually in Gaza we see only numbers, and even these numbers are not so much important for us. I'm saying for us, because we are all humanity, right?
Yeah.
But on daily basis, they are killing so many babies, so many innocent people, and unfortunately dehumanization is playing the significant role in that sense. And politically speaking, especially, you know, the West has the dog in that fight. I am putting quotation mark there. This is also the problem. But I tried to paint our real world in my previous answer. It's very gray. It's very gray, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I believe that we Muslims need to find the strength with ourselves personally, collectively, from the message of the God Almighty, and to start to talk to people about the other and better possibilities for the humanity. We need to do it. It is one of our missions. And this is something what Elizabeth knew very well.
So to conclude, final words from you both to everyone about this extraordinary man we've been talking about, your former president, his enduring relevance, his intellectual potency, his wisdom, his leadership, still has much to say to us today, not just within this nation, but globally. He seems to transcend his particularity as a head of state here to a much more existential level, to use that word again. You mentioned existentialism
yes.
earlier. And that's interesting. It's very, very, very unusual. Few politicians have certainly reached that stature internationally. Only a handful, perhaps, in history have ever reached that level. So do you have some concluding reflections on that?
I would say that really we still have so much to learn from him. He was a person who received very important awards for the promotion of the democracy, for the promotion of the Islamic thought, etc., etc. People don't know that. He had a chance to talk to very influential persons of the time, Muhammad Ali, Bill Clinton, politicians, Bono Vox, for example, Bernard Henri Levy as a philosopher. And all of them, after the talk, said, wow, this guy is so deep. In that sense. So it means that still he has so many things to offer to us. We just need to read, to reevaluate, to explain again for his messages for our time. The first place, and personally for me, Alija Izetbegović was very, very important Islamic thinker, and then, of course, politician. The president of the presidency during probably the worst period of our history, and we survived. We survived. This is our victory, that we survived as a Muslims, as carriers of values here, because we were Bosniaks and Bosnians, people who were on the side of the Bosnian statehood. So lot of important messages still we can extract from his thought and from his life. I'm definitely sure about it, especially because of that position of the European Muslim thinker.
Now, that's wonderfully said.
Ali Zabekovic used to argue that the maximum of world politics took place at the minimum of Bosnian soil. He was very skillful in putting in very simple words something that is complex and hard to understand. But I fully agree with what my colleague Admir have said, but I would add to it, he dislike many other politicians from the region that used to and still produces a lot of history, probably much more than it's capable of consuming. Many politicians and many famous historic figures have been created by history. Very few of them in our part of the world created or produced history. Ali Izetbegović was among those very seldom or rare ones that was producing history on his own. Dislike many other politicians and leaders who tended to see what their constituencies, their supporters and people would like to hear and see, and then to promise it to them in order to get in the office and stay in the office. He was usually picking up courses that, by his best judgment, were most sound and prospering, promising for their nation, regardless of the price and cost and danger associated with the course he would elect. So he, instead of thinking of the next elections and many other leaders and politicians did, he was thinking about next generations. It is true that he was very proud of his Islamic nature, but all arrangements he has made for Bosnia and Herzegovina were globally made, primarily with non-Islamic leaders and politicians, which confirms his cosmopolitical and cosmopolitan view of the world, of life, of the politics, and many other areas of human endeavor. And he was, I had the impression he was always in possession of much more knowledge, power, and ideas than he was willing to share with others.
Okay, well, maybe we'll leave it there. There's much food for thought. I very much appreciate you, both of your extraordinary contributions about this amazing human being, and do encourage everyone to get hold of his book, Islam Between East and West. And there's another book here which I've not read, Inescapable Questions, Autobiographical Notes by the Former President. I've not read this yet, but inshallah, I will. So thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time. It was absolute pleasure.
Thank you for your time.
Till next time. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.